He portrayed himself as a man under siege, but in truth, he knew he held the advantage.
The FBI was feeding him daily summaries of Oppenheimer's movements and conversations with his lawyers, thereby allowing him to anticipate all of Oppenheimer's legal maneuvers. He knew Oppenheimer's FBI file contained information that Oppenheimer's lawyers would never see, because he was going to make sure that they were not given the necessary security clearance. Moreover, he was going to select the members of the hearing board.
On January 16th, Garrison requested a security clearance for himself and Herb Marks, and Strauss responded by denying a clearance for Marks, a former member of the AEC's legal staff.
Whether or not Garrison would have received his clearance in time to help him prepare the case is an open question. But he took the position that either the entire defense team should be cleared or none, a decision he would soon regret and try unsuccessfully to reverse. Late in March, however, Garrison learned that the members of the hearing board were going to spend a full week studying raw FBI investigative files on Oppenheimer. Worse, Garrison learned to his dismay that the AEC's prosecuting attorney would be present to help guide the board members through the derogatory items in the FBI file and answer their questions. Garrison had a sinking feeling that after a week's immersion in the files, the board members would become prejudiced against his client. But when he asked for the same privilege to be present during this week-long briefing, he was flatly rebuffed. Simultaneously, Garrison tried to get an emergency security clearance for himself so that he might at least read some of the same material.
But Strauss told the Justice Department that under no circumstances should we grant emergency clearance. In Strauss' view, neither Oppenheimer nor his lawyer had any of the rights afforded to a defendant in a court of law. This was an AEC Personnel Security Board hearing, not a civil trial, and Strauss was going to be the arbiter of the rules. Strauss was unfazed by the extra-constitutional nature of things he was doing to undermine Oppenheimer's defense.
He knew, but did not care, that the FBI wiretaps were illegal, telling one agent that the Bureau's technical coverage on Oppenheimer at Princeton had been most helpful to the AEC and that they were aware beforehand of the moves he was contemplating.
Such tactics so offended Harold Green that he told Strauss that the case was not so much an inquiry as a prosecution and that he did not want to have anything to do with it.
He asked to be removed from the case.
One day, while visiting the Bakers in Washington, Robert made it clear to his hosts that he thought he was being monitored. "He'd come in the room," recalled Gene Baker, "and before he'd do anything else, he'd lift the pictures and look under them to see where the recording device was."
One night, he took down a picture that was hanging on the wall and said, "There it is!"
Baker said the surveillance terrified Oppenheimer.
When an FBI agent in Newark suggested discontinuing the electronic surveillance on Oppenheimer's home in view of the fact that it might disclose attorney-client relations, Hoover refused. The FBI's surveillance, moreover, was not confined to Oppenheimer alone. When Kitty's elderly parents, Franz and Kate Puning, returned by ship from a trip to Europe, the Bureau arranged to have their baggage thoroughly searched by U.S. customs agents. They also photographed all the written material in the possession of the Punings. Kitty's father, who was confined to a wheelchair, and Mrs. Puning were so unnerved by the treatment that they had to be hospitalized.